Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Howdy, everyone.
Welcome to... We're, like, just over a month out from college football week.
Sure.
Mets in a free fall week.
Yep.
We'll go with that as your monthly Mets talk until we get to October, and then if they're still in, then it's daily Mets talk.
I'm fine limiting it to that. That was a good amount of Mets talk. We're actually over our Mets talk now. Too much now.
Uh-oh. All right, so I guess a couple Syracuse items before we dive into SEC previews, which should be entertaining. They always are, as are the characters in that conference. But starting with Syracuse, for those listening, yesterday, for us here today, NJ.com had an article that said Urban Meyer urged Chris Ash, his former defensive coordinator at Ohio State, to take the Rutgers job over the Syracuse job, mostly because of recruiting. I don't really think that's a big deal, but obviously, like, a lot of fans seem a little perturbed by that. I don't really... If you're going to use recruiting as the main metric for why you can or can't succeed, and Urban Meyer may, based on the fact that he's largely, outside of a stint in Utah, coached in Ohio and Florida, if you want to use that as your metric, I can understand why you'd maybe choose New Jersey over a private school in New York. But Dan, what's your take?
Yeah, no, I think that's totally right. On paper, Rutgers should be an easier place to recruit to than Syracuse. Obviously, it's kind of gone back and forth over the last couple of years, depending on how the two teams have done. But they're a public school. They're in a much more talent-rich state. They don't have history, really, that Syracuse does, but that only means so much, and that, you know, only certain recruits really care. Some do, some don't. But yeah, I mean, if you don't have any connections to either school, I totally get why Rutgers would make more sense. There's also the fact that Ash is a defensive coach. I saw something from the Big Ten Media Days where he is basically like, I'm focused on defense. That's my side of the ball. That's what I know. He's not going to meddle too much in the offense. Where Babers, as an offensive coach with a very specific system that he is pretty sure will work, I think he has a little more leniency in the type of job he takes because Babers can probably build a good offense just about anywhere because he knows the types of players he wants to recruit, and it's not always relying upon, you know, blue chip prospects. So for Ash, where he doesn't have his own offensive system and doesn't have his own philosophy on that end of the ball, going to a place where you can, on paper, get more talent just based on the area is probably pretty important. So I totally get it. I don't think Syracuse fans should feel slighted about it. Like, it's just, you know, the two schools are very different. They both have advantages and disadvantages. I think it's totally justifiable what Ash said and what Meyer said and everything else. I totally get it.
No, I completely agree. And you know what? At the same time, too, like, that's only one side of the story for Meyer and Ash. Like, we don't really know what Mark Coyle's thinking was, what Kent Siverud, who I'm sure was involved in the coaching hire, what his thinking was. We don't really know for sure if the finalists were just Babers and Ash. We don't really know if it was Babers' job to lose. So there's a lot more to this. You know, obviously it became a bit of a conversation point among Syracuse fans, and I am glad we ended up with Babers over Ash, especially coming off of, you know, kind of a career defensive coordinator coaching us and with some mixed results and obviously a floundering offense. I think, you know, Syracuse understood whether it lucked into this or this was on purpose. They ended up with, an offensively minded coach, one that I think is almost guaranteed to be able to fix at least that side of the ball compared to what it's been in recent years. And with that, I think both schools can be perfectly happy with what they got. Dan, I know you crunched some numbers right afterward, showing that, you know, the rate of success for offensive coordinators turned head coaches at power conference schools is a lot better than defense coordinators. And I know head coaches are more successful by and large than coordinators as well.
Right. And when I ran those, it was, I think, right after these hires were made, yeah, or maybe yeah, before. I don't have the sheet available to me. There was basically, like, it was a blatant, like, there definitely wasn't enough of a sample size to really determine anything. And if there was anything that I determined from looking at that, it was that, like, overall, it seemed like after you get past established head coaches, it's pretty much a crapshoot. But those that were head coaches tended to succeed more than coordinators, and offensive coordinators tended to succeed more than defensive coordinators. So, but obviously, like, a lot of those, there weren't, like, in the stretch I looked at, which was, I think, 5 or 6 years, like, there weren't that many DCs hired. Like, it was a run of OCs being hired, and I think it's now kind of getting more 50-50. These things tend to go in those spurts, especially in the NFL. College, it's a little more wide open, but even so, like, you know, different ADs see what other ones do and see who's working, and there's always, like, a couple hot prospects who, coach prospects, who blow up, and they're on one side of the ball, so people start to hire on that side of the ball. So it goes in ebbs and flows, but those tended to be the tendencies. And I agree, like what you said, I'm glad we got Babers over Ash. I was very lukewarm on the idea of Ash when he was being mentioned. I was pretty thrilled about Babers. And I'm sure there are Rutgers fans who will say the exact opposite. So, and that's fair. That's their guy. And you should always be excited about your first-year coach. There's not a ton that a first-year coach before the fall comes around can do to really have you sour on them. So I guess we'll see how it works out in like 4 years.
Agreed. Another big kind of Syracuse note today, and again for listeners yesterday, Stephen Bailey put up a really extensive Q&A with Tommy DeVito, the standout rising quarterback commit for SU. Dan, anything that stuck out in that from your point of view? I know for me, the biggest takeaway of all was the question about any other schools reaching out, and DeVito shutting it down pretty quickly, and you know, saying that I think they all got the message that he's not headed anywhere, which is obviously good to hear. Doesn't mean he's 100% in, doesn't mean anything like that, but it does mean that once again, you know, DeVito's really doubling down on the "I'm good where I am" narrative.
Yeah, I mean, I think Syracuse is a lot working in its favor. We talked about this a fair amount, but obviously they were in on him early, which was huge, and well before he blew up, honestly, a couple months. So if he's a guy who really values that kind of loyalty on Syracuse's part, that helps. And like I brought up before, and this is only getting even, the circumstances are actually shifting more in Syracuse's favor as we get down the stretch, but pretty much every big program, like program that's a good tier above Syracuse or more, has a quarterback already, and probably a quarterback that was, if not in the Elite 11 finals, you know, or the opening finals, they were probably at the Elite 11 with DeVito at some point, which means that they probably got beat up by DeVito because he finished essentially second, it seems like, which is awesome. But like, even if you look at schools like Alabama, they have two guys now. They have Tua Tagovailoa from Hawaii, and they also have Mac Jones from he was in Kentucky, UK commit. He switched. So they're not going to take another quarterback. Ohio State has two quarterbacks. They're not going to take another. So like, the really, really big programs that could probably afford to snag a second blue chip quarterback, they're already filling up, and most of them won't take a second one because they don't want to make the first one upset. So quarterback is like the one position where you can probably feel pretty good, barring a coaching change or like some super Trump offer coming in.
Or it could be a disaster this regular season.
Yeah, I mean, if the team does 1-10 and or 1-11 and Babers, you know, looks like he's never coached before, you know, maybe, I mean, anything can happen. Like, I'm not saying that DeVito's, you know, signed and delivered and everything's, you know, perfect. But I totally believe him when he says he's, you know, shut it down. By all accounts, it seems to be what's happened. And they're just, the number of schools that can come in and totally trump what Syracuse is offering is dwindling by the day. So I feel pretty good about it until I have reason not to. So and that was a really good read. I'm like everyone else. Like, we try to be like above the fray a little bit, but like, I'll read anything about Tommy DeVito at this point. He's a very exciting prospect. He's probably, like, at this point, he has to be the biggest name prospect Syracuse has had in 8 years, probably more, probably closer to 10, 12, 15, just based on all of these camps. And finishing as the MVP of the 7-on-7 at the opening is amazing. Like, that's every big program had a quarterback there, and ours finished, aside from Tagovailoa, who won the MVP, and I apologize to all the Alabama fans listening, I'm killing his name, but he won the MVP of the whole thing, and then DeVito was on the all 7-on-7 team, and that seems to be pretty much number two. So just keep your fingers crossed, everyone. I totally get why people would get you know, nervous, just because it's uncharted territory, really, even with guys like you know, that we've had in years past. This is like a whole other level of player in terms of the acclaim. So Hopefully we hang on.
Yeah, completely agree. You know, we've had, I mean, again, this is stuff that we've mentioned here and there over the last few weeks, at least. You know, we've never had an Elite 11 QB.
We had one a couple years ago. We had, what's his name?
But he didn't make Oregon.
He didn't make the opening. He made the Elite 11 finals. Yeah. So he was like one of the, he was like 11 or 12 through 22 or whatever. Like he was, yeah. And that was a big deal then. Agreed. But he finished towards the bottom of that. So, yeah. So we never this is like a whole, yeah.
Yeah. So we never had a kid at the opening.
I don't think we've had anyone at the opening. I don't even think, like, quarterback. I don't think we've ever had a player at the opening.
Yeah. So between that, the fact that, again, you said a lot of these schools are locked up. You know, DeVito, one of his big things is playing time. Syracuse offers that probably better than most of the schools he'd be walking into. I mean, a lot of these schools on a higher tier or two than Syracuse, you know, not only do they have one or two quarterbacks in this class already, but they also have, you know, a quarterback in most of the other classes ahead of them. So, you know, this is a situation where he'd definitely be redshirting. He'd definitely be sitting on the bench for a year or two after that, and then maybe have a year or two to start. Syracuse, I think, even if Dungy succeeds, and I feel like this is going to be a good year for him, I think DeVito still gets a better chance to play earlier than at Syracuse than he would at most places. Also, as an East Coast Italian, I would say that, you know, somebody believes in you early, and that loyalty is usually a pretty compelling factor, whether you acknowledge it or not. Tommy's obviously an East Coast Italian as well. I feel like that might have an effect. I also think in general, you know, he's not just a great athlete, but you read the interviews with him. He just seems like a really well-spoken kid, and I think that's actually helped. The fact that he's well-spoken, he has a personality, he's not just using coach speak. He seems like someone who is attracting attention on his own, both with his play and just with the type of guy he is. And I think that that's, you know, just something that's helping us out a lot. And again, like you said, this is one of the like, everyone lost their mind about Robert Washington last year, and obviously that turned into nothing. This is different, and it's obviously, you know, helping us gain interest from a lot of, I think, higher profile players. And we've gone through a lot of these wide receivers and things like that. I guess this is a good segue. You know, Darius Fagan from down in Miami. It seemed like USC was kind of where he was headed for a long time, and then LSU. I know Alabama was in on it, but, you know, he committed over last weekend, and I think he seems like your prototypical linebacker in the Tampa 2 for Syracuse now, and he seems like somebody who's, I mean, he's not the same type of name as DeVito necessarily, but he's the type of guy that, you know, he's a great defender, and he's a great defender against elite competition, you know, down in South Florida.
Yeah, I mean, you can say he's not as big a name, but, like, the offers, I'm looking at his offer sheet, Alabama, Louisville, Nebraska, USC, like,
right, that's
no
a three
joke.
Star. That's no three-star, or it's no low three-star. This is a guy who could easily be convinced to be a four, depending on, you know, what camps you saw him at.
Right. We've discussed this as well. Like, there's a kind of a balance when you talk about these Florida recruits where there's, like, they get way more exposure across the board because there's more camps and more games on TV and more everything else. But then you have a kid like this. He's playing at Miami Southridge, which I believe is not one of the bigger programs in Miami. I recognize the name, but not at the same level as a lot of those other South Florida schools. But it's also like when there's so many awesome players down there, like, some guys are just not going to get the attention that they probably deserve, where if they played in New York, you know, maybe everyone would question whether or not they're playing the best talent, but their talent would stick out really, really well. But obviously, I think Nick Saban knows what a good player looks like, and Bobby Petrino, and, I mean, who knows with Clay Helton. He went to USC, so that's probably good enough. Les Miles. Yeah, so I feel pretty good about getting a guy that all those people offered. He has prototypical linebacker size. Like we said, he's playing against top competition. So, yeah, this was an awesome get. I love the story that he chose us over all those schools because of our drama department, which is amazing. Because I was racking my brain when this happened. There is no way I can think of a Syracuse football or basketball player that has come to study drama. Like, there's no way I can think of one.
And the fact that, you know, the staff seemed to be pretty, I mean, at least now. I mean, who knows?
That's the question. I hope they honor it, because that's, you know, not really a Syracuse thing, but, like, across college football, There will be a lot of times where they tell you, oh, yeah, you could definitely come study this, and they'll admit you to the school, and then, like, 2 weeks in, they're like, yeah, so you're not going to be able to do this just time-wise. So hopefully he's allowed to, I mean, allowed, I'm sure if he pushes, he'll do it, but I hope he is able to actually pursue the academic, things he wants. That's always, it's like kind of one of the uglier parts of recruiting, and it's not just a Syracuse thing. Like I said, it's across the board, but Syracuse is definitely involved in the same things. So hopefully he's allowed to be in the drama department.
Yeah, and honestly, I was joking about, you know, when he committed, that the fact that we beat out USC for a kid who wanted to act was stunning to me, and then I got eaten alive by Syracuse Twitter and commenters. So I'm well aware of how good our acting chops are. I understand the draw of New York. I also live in Los Angeles and understand that USC controls this town in a way that Syracuse does not in New York. I'm not saying that there is a better choice. I'm just saying that if I heard a kid wanted to act, I would automatically think USC. That might be misguided, but it's just the fact of the matter.
And maybe Helton said, you know, that's not going to happen, so who knows. But he has done a dope visit there, it sounds like, so we'll see. Hopefully we hang on. Hopefully the, Hollywood sign and the walk of the, everything else doesn't lure him down out to your side of the world.
Maybe it ends up being the 1 week we get rain every 5 years.
Yeah, and he'll talk to Syracuse when it's 85 and everyone's, sunbathing out in the quad.
Speaking of, we do need that rain, so let's try to time that out accordingly.
Yeah, you can have it. The last 2 weeks in New York, we've basically had Florida weather. Ooh. Where it's been like mid-90s and humid, and then in the afternoon we get a monsoon. Like, it's been the most absurd weather I can ever remember. It's happened like 4 or 5 times over the last 2 weeks.
Troy Noon's an absolute weathercast here with Dan Lyons. We're chatting weather.
So interesting. Hot weather takes.
No, actually, if you guys could send that water to us, that'd be great. Since, once again, it's rained 5 times in the last 3 years. We don't have water here, or at least we're running very low. And that's going to become a problem easily within the next 6 months.
Yeah, that seems not ideal.
No, it is not. Especially for beer making, which, again, critical. Moving on a little bit before we get to halftime and all the other fun stuff that we have planned around here.
You really blew a perfect segue there.
Yeah, that's fine.
I was like, we're a little early, but can we, I mean, are we?
I typically nail those segues. No, so the Big Lead decided to name their top 50 college basketball players, and Tyler Lydon made the list, probably not surprising, but they ranked him 9th. Now, I'm not going to complain, I'm not going to, look a gift horse in the mouth, anything like that, but Dan, do you think Tyler Lydon is the 9th best player in college basketball this year?
No. I think,
Though if he is, awesome.
I mean, yeah, I'll sign for it, I'll take it. I think that there's a better chance that he's the 9th overall pick in the NBA draft than that he's the 9th best player in college basketball next year. I'll say that. And in McIntyre's piece, Jason McIntyre from the Big Lead, aside from the fact that he had like a million really bad inaccuracies, he said that he thought Lydon could average 18 and 10 next year, which also seems really, really bold considering how many players Boeheim is going to work in, especially if they get Andrew White. There's a chance that Lydon only plays like 28 minutes a game, and I'm sure he'll play more in crunch time. But I think I would take like a good 14 and 7 and a couple blocks and hit some threes. 18 and 10, like no one, we looked it up when he said that. Like no one's done that since Melo. Yep. And before Melo, I think it was Billy Owens. So it's not like this is like every year Syracuse is an 18 and 10 guy. So that was a little aggressive, but I appreciate the optimism.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice counteraction to the writing that said that Syracuse didn't even make the Final Four last year.
Oh yeah, that too. And Andrew White wasn't on the list at all. And then when he was added to the list, it said that he just announced a transfer, which was actually a month ago. And then they also had a player who's no longer in college on the list, and a lot of other fun stuff. So that was it was good. It was really good.
You give it a lot of stock in that list.
Yeah, it was great.
Tyus Battle and Tyler Roberson were also on the list.
They were added post haste to the, like, hey, people tweeted me about these players, so I put them on.
Yeah,
part of the list.
I buy into both, but again, I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of these were basing it too much on pro potential and pro prospects. I think Leiden is probably one of the top 25, and he's toward the bottom of that list. That's not a knock on him, because to be honest, the Syracuse team already looks fairly deep, and that's before we potentially add White. I think that everyone named in that could potentially get drafted. I know that some people are not in the same mindset about Roberson as I am, but I mean, he's somebody who can jump out of a gym. He's somebody who can get rebounds at the best of them. If he can just get a little bit more consistent, he's going to be a second-round draft pick this year, and I'll stand by that until the very end.
I don't know that I buy that, but he could be a really useful player. I just, you know, the Roberson thing, like, we all know what he is at this point. He's very frustrating. He occasionally has bouts of total brilliance and then sometimes just nothing. So hopefully it's more of the former than the latter this year. Or we just tell him he's playing Duke every night and he'll go crazy. He always crushes Duke.
No, that's fine. I think if Roberson can get 9 rebounds a game playing 25 to 28 minutes, I think a team's going to take a flyer on him. But again, that really just depends on the rest of the big man class, too.
Yeah.
And you never know with the with all the Europeans that show up, because that could definitely, as we saw this year, could definitely start pushing guys in 3 to 5 slots minimum from where they maybe were supposed to be drafted.
We'll see. I mean, if he could add a jump shot, I would be far more convinced.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I think, I don't know, I guess to me, I feel like a guy who can rebound like that, it's hard to teach that level of intensity and concentration to pull down boards the way he has. I feel like it's easier to, if you have the right amount of time and the right staff in place, you can fix somebody's jumper. Maybe that's incorrect to some people, but that's at least how I feel.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, we've seen it in the NBA. Like, there are a lot of guys who, like Jason Kidd's an example. A lot of, like, wings who enter the NBA and cannot shoot at all and wind up being almost, like, 3-and-D guys down the stretch of their career just as they acquire it by, like, the time they're in their early 30s. So, like, you can definitely teach a jumper better than you can teach probably rebounding instincts. It's just, like, he hasn't shown it at all. It's not like he's, like, shoots it occasionally and hits, you know, 30%. But, yeah, I mean, hopefully that's what he's been doing all offseason. If he could hit 33% of his corner threes, he would be, and that's not a huge great number, but if he could reliably hit that shot, he'd be such a useful player, and it'd be really hard to keep him off the floor. So that'd be nice.
I concur. Dan, anything else Syracuse wise before we go into maybe an early halftime today?
We got the ACC Network and an expanded basketball schedule, which the first one, I think, the first one, I mean, we can't really say anything bad about. That's awesome, even if it doesn't, like, totally, isn't the same equal to the SEC Network. I think it's still really good and puts ACC in a really good place. Also, the grant of rights through 2036, which is arguably just as big. It means that ACC is not getting poached anytime soon, and Notre Dame's not going anywhere. The expanded schedule, I kind of like it as long as, and we talked about this, I think, on the site and on Twitter and everything else, as long as it doesn't mean we're losing marquee games.
We are.
This is like the opposite of our football scheduling philosophy. Like, keep those games. In basketball, we'll make up the ground if we lose a couple most years. I don't really have a major interest in watching us play Louisiana Tech or Northern Florida or whoever else. So if we lose like 2 of those games, and instead of losing to the UConn games, the Georgetown games, so we'll see how Syracuse approaches it. But overall, like, more games than Duke and Louisville and North Carolina, I think I hope that we play Duke twice every year.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that to us, but I think, to be honest, what I'd like to see almost is them to keep the rotation the way it is in terms of permanent teams. Maybe even knock off one if he can, and then just have us play play teams twice more often.
That's probably more likely.
Yeah, like I feel like, and this is kind of the inherent problem, though, is that what's going to happen is we're going to end up playing Wake Forest twice a year and NC State twice a year more frequently, and in return, instead of those, you know, meh games, replacing your North Floridas and your South Carolina States, they're going to replace your Georgetowns and your UConns and your St. John's and your Villanovas.
Yeah, if that's what it ends up being, then I won't like it as much.
Based on what the scheduling article that was up on Syracuse.com on Wednesday said, it seems very likely that's going to happen.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we won't really know until Syracuse decides to, like, show us what a schedule looks like on one of these years. I mean, if it's NC State and Wake replacing the teams that we've already cited, like the trap teams, then that's still fine. Like, I'd still rather play Wake twice and NC State twice than play South Carolina State. But, you know, we'll see how it happens. I think it's not, like, a definite good or bad, which is fine. Like, because, you know, oftentimes we are able to make a really snap judgment on these things. This one, I'm fine holding off and seeing how it works.
Well, it's entertaining, too, because, I mean, like, and they addressed this a little bit when they were talking to Mark Richt and some of the other coaches, like, half of the ACC seems pretty eager to move to 9 games, especially a team that's terrible at scheduling like Syracuse and really can't get home and homes as easily as Syracuse. And probably has to pay a premium to get teams to come up there, too. I mean, I don't really know what we pay Middle Tennessee. I would assume it costs us a lot more to get an FAU or an FIU or a team like that to come up to the Dome. But there's a lot of teams pushing for 9. I feel like a lot of teams pushing for 9, there's a lot of teams not. I feel like in basketball, there's probably a lot more teams that pushed for 20, especially because, you know, you look at the old ACC members, I think right there, a lot of those folks would rather, even like the Clemsons of the world and Georgia Techs would rather face more of, because I mean they're Clemson and Georgia Tech in particular just scheduled terribly outside of the ACC. I'm sure they would love to you know, have just more games against traditional rivals, but thing is, those schools also have, you know, non-conference foes that they like to play, and I don't really think that the Georgia Tech Georgia basketball rivalry is what the football rivalry is, and same goes for Clemson South Carolina. But like, when you look at it from that standpoint, I think we're one of the only schools that is probably adamantly against an increase from 18 to 20, because we have, you know, potentially as many as 4 teams that we'd like to face at least 2 of every season in non-conference play.
And because we love to schedule home games, like as everyone reminds us of every single year. We are very into our home games.
You would be too if you could pack 30,000 people into your stadium.
I'm not judging.
I know. No, you're not.
Yeah, so I buy that. I'm actually, like, more and more kind of on board with the 9-game football schedule, though, and a lot of it is because Syracuse is so bad at scheduling.
Yeah, like, we got one. It's like, finally.
And we have no rivals, so it's not like we're losing, like, oh, no, we're not going to be able to schedule who?
West Virginia, like, who wasn't scheduling us anyway.
Right. Like, we don't have rivals. We don't, like, Penn State's not a rival anymore, if they were, for, like, what, 10 years, maybe? Like, we can schedule those teams anyway, because we do, and we, you know, it's not, if we're not playing them every year, like, this isn't any different than the status quo. So, yeah.
Fine. All right. Halftime. Dan, what have you been drinking?
Not a ton of new stuff. I had, I think the most interesting thing I had was the Tropical Pale Ale from Boulevard. It wasn't my favorite Boulevard, to be honest. I much prefer a lot of their other ones. It was interesting. I didn't really think the tropicalness really came through all that strongly. It was really just a solid, like, American pale ale. Nothing crazy. And then just some juice stuff, some other stuff that I drink on a fairly regular basis, but not a ton of exciting new things this weekend.
Fair enough. I had a few things. Had from Martin House Brewing down in Fort Worth. Had the Salty Lady. It was a salted goza, and it was very interesting. It was nice, refreshing. It was a warm day here, so it was nice to be able to relax at one of those. I had a Stone and Joy after 7-4, and Jesus Christ, just Brett, just bomb. I mean, it was. It disappointed me, not because I never had a Brett beer before. I have. It's just the Brett was just so overwhelming that you really didn't know what else was going on in the beer besides that, which is a shame. But I wanted to mention it because I know a lot of people probably have or will be drinking and enjoy after sometime soon. Hop Saint is a brewery about a mile from me. Ends up that I've mentioned the brewery Abigail a couple times. They're down in Hermosa Beach. Their head brewer left a couple years ago, started Hop Saint, a brewery/restaurant. He actually brought some of the recipes with him from Abigail that made that place kind of on the map. Name Dropper IPA was probably their best beer I've had from them to date. They also have some really good food, but yeah, Name Dropper could become a local staple for me. Also had The Wanderer from the brewery and their Tarot label. It's kind of a nice mix of wine barrel aging and bourbon barrel aging coming together for a gorgeous, delicious sour. Had the beer once before, but it was nice to get a full 750-milliliter bottle this time. And also had from Live Oak Brewing down in Texas, their Hefeweizen. Excellent, excellent beer. Probably one of my favorite Hefs. So thanks again to my buddy Tim down the Houston area for sending that along. And that's all we have for beer.
All right, I'll be up in Cape Cod this weekend, so hopefully I can get my hands on some Massachusetts beers. But there's also a chance that my friends just buy a lot of Miller Lite, and I just turf that down.
Yeah, or they buy a Sam Adams variety pack. Cause...
That would be nice. I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I could. Although, admittedly, I haven't drank Sam Adams in a while.
Sam Adams is totally fine. It's a totally fine. Some of their like more unique ones are really good, actually. But like a Boston Lager, if there's nothing else at the bar, like that's a totally fine, like B, maybe B minus, but probably a B, like beer. Like, it's fine. I have no problem with it.
Well, since I'm a West Coast beer snob, that thinks all of Sam Adams beers taste the same. I will disagree.
I mean, it's not like I'm doing it my way. Like, I very rarely end up drinking Sam Adams unless it's like... Here, the nice thing about Sam Adams is like you can reliably, you should be able to find it pretty much anywhere. So if like you're at a beer bar or a bar that's like kind of crappy beer selection, like you can probably find a Boston Lager and it's fine.
You'd be surprised here. They actually don't really have much on anywhere anymore around here. You're usually looking at like your standard, you know, light lagers and crap. And then you're going to find Sierra Nevada Pale Ale on every menu. And then usually in that Sam Adams slot is now Boston Beer Company's West Coast brewery, Angel City, that makes worse beer than Sam Adams. But they have a really nice facility that I've been to a couple times, and it's super cool. It's like in this old kind of warehouse looking spot downtown LA. There's like a loft area inside of it. There's art exhibits that they do in there. So it's a cool space, so I'll go for that. But yeah, the last couple beers I've had from them have been misses, unfortunately.
Fair enough.
All right. Supposed to be SEC, and now we are. So yeah, bunch going on in the self-appointed best conference in America. Dan, spinning the wheel, where would you like to begin in this treasure trove of narrative ball? There's only three teams that I don't want to talk about, but if we end up
on
them,
I guess
that's fine. Oh, yes, go for it.
Missouri.
Yes.
Mississippi State.
No.
You want to talk about them?
I don't want to talk about the off-the-field stuff, though I do want to talk about...
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
I do want to talk about Dan Mullen being an idiot.
For being there still?
Yeah, like, why are you still there? Is this your ceiling? Have you realized that?
All right, so Mizzou, no. I mean, I almost think Vandy's kind of interesting. I don't know. They're probably on that list, right?
No, because, as you know, I am a private school apologist for every school but Baylor. And we'll support Vanderbilt football.
Their defense is really good. Their offense is trash.
It is. But I went out of my way when I was in Nashville last year to visit that stadium.
Vandy might be last year's Mizzou, which most teams would not be cool with, but Vandy should probably be cool with. All right. A couple curveballs there. You don't want to talk about Kentucky.
Correct.
Okay. 2 for 3. This is fun. South Carolina?
Yes, because they are going to be unmitigated trash. And, like, there's some people...
It's so interesting that they just decided to hire Muschamp and are, like, totally down with that. I'm kind of a South Carolina apologist for a lot of reasons. They're not that interesting on the field, so I get it. But they just hired Will Muschamp, like, right after he proved he was a pretty bad head coach. So, yeah.
I would have been so... Like, I would have been mad if Syracuse hired Muschamp.
I wouldn't have been thrilled. No.
Yeah, and, like, if we would have been angry if Syracuse hired Muschamp. If you're South Carolina, admittedly not with the illustrious... No, I put that in air quotes. history of Syracuse football, and pretty much you can boil down South Carolina's greatest achievements to the last 5 years of Steve Spurrier's coaching career.
Like, and George Rogers Heisman.
Fair.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Like, I would hate the Muschamp hire. I think that people are far overestimating what's left on that roster. I've got them losing 9 games this year because I do not like what I see over in Columbia.
Here's the thing, though. It's the SEC, so while they probably still are the best conference, they're so unimaginative when it comes to hiring across the board. Even like Mizzou, like they got infected by it, and I think that might actually be a decent hire for them. But man, like they didn't stretch too hard for it. That like Muschamp is a known quantity, and even if it was a bad known quantity, they're like, oh, he won 11 games at one time. And, like, we know his name, and he's coached in this league before, so, yeah, sure.
Yeah, you see.
And it's not like, I mean, South Carolina could have done it in Dino Babers, and they'd be immediately one of the more interesting teams in the conference, in the division for sure.
They did try Tom Herman, admittedly.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tom Herman could have also gone, like, I mean, we still don't know why, like, Georgia or USC didn't, like, try really hard for Tom Herman, but, like, Tom Herman can do better than South Carolina.
Well, we knew why USC didn't.
No, I mean, he didn't. Yeah, I mean, Tom Herman is not a USC guy. I mean, impossible to sell that. Impossible to sell the guy who just won the Peach Bowl in his first year with a Group of Five team against Florida State to your USC fan base. Better to Clay Helton. He won 8 games last year.
Well, the interview process at USC is, like, quick. Name the 5 things Pete Carroll would put on a bagel. And then you've got a full minute to do it. But at one wrong answer, and you're out. And unfortunately, you know, Tom Herman said locks, and Pete Carroll doesn't like locks.
It's you should have known. Like, come on, Tom.
Should have known. Pete's not a locks guy. So yeah, that was live footage actually from the hiring process. So teams I actually want to talk about. Let's go with. Might as well start with Alabama since I feel like there's a lot to talk about there, and then we can kind of move on and talk about everybody else after.
That works because I have their schedule and their. Depth chart open, and we don't have Bill C to rely on this week. So, but luckily it's the SEC, so we know enough about them by ourselves.
That's good. I actually had well between that and I also have a fresh Phil Steele sitting next to me, which
look at you.
Well, I tried to find it in the airport on my way out to London, and they didn't have it at LAX, but they did have it at JFK, which I found to be just stunning because you have one city with 2 teams, and you have another city with 0 teams, and yet. The one with 2 teams had nothing even close to a college football preview magazine anywhere in the place.
I mean, it's very Pac-12.
Yeah, actually, that is very Pac-12 of them. <It's just laughs> not even a sign of the league happening. You wouldn't even know that. You honestly, because of where they play and where I live, you wouldn't even know that USC and UCLA were like in the city.
And like 2 of the most 15 most talented teams in the country and...
And historically, 2 of the probably 15 to 20 programs that, like, you'd bank college football on.
Right.
But, yeah, whatever. Okay. So, Alabama. Not, like, going through the whole schedule, but at least looking at it, like, there's obviously the annual Ole Miss trip up in there.
Real early this year.
Real early. And that might not even be the game day game, because week 3 is actually pretty loaded again this year.
Yeah, week 2 is like a bit of a lull after week 1 is just insanity. Like, Alabama-USC is probably, what, the 7th, 8th most interesting game of that day?
Yeah, I'd put it somewhere around there.
And that could be number 1, even with USC being, like, a question mark. Like, that could be number 1 most weeks of most years.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. I'd say looking at the USC game first, and again, we're not going through the whole schedule. USC is going to get thrashed. It doesn't mean USC is going to be bad. This is going to be one of those USC years where like they look just like absolute garbage at the beginning, and then like spend the second half of the year like rewriting that narrative.
Yeah, no, this is just a bad game for USC to start with. I know it's not like a super super new head coach, but it's still technically a new head coach. You're breaking in a new quarterback, as is Alabama, but Alabama like doesn't need a quarterback.
No.
Alabama has like they're pretty much most of their defense intact. Their offensive line is nasty, assuming Cam Robinson is going to play because he didn't get suspended for having a gun, which, you know, whatever. Don't need to pass judgment on that right now. But like, Bo, there's no way Bo doesn't, like, just come out of the gates and run for, like, 140 yards in this game, right?
It sounds right. what do you think about Cooper Bateman? Just, like, I never know what to think of him because, again, like, you're right, doesn't need a quarterback, but I think more and more today, and to be honest, I think that, you know, what happened in that national championship game sort of proved that they need at least a little bit of a quarterback.
If
you're going to hang with more teams that are going to run spread and you're going to have to try to outscore them.
Yeah, I mean, I've been rooting for Blake Barnett to win the job as a redshirt freshman. It seems like Bateman's going to be the guy at least now. He's kind of interesting. I mean, he's a little more dual threat-ish. He played a little bit last year, and that ended up being kind of a mistake. But yeah, I mean, it's an Alabama quarterback. You can probably Lane Kiffin, for all of his warts, is really good at putting his quarterbacks in situations in which they can succeed without giving them too much. They have weapons all across the field. Calvin Ridley, like, he gets a lot of attention, and I still don't know that he's quite, like, hyped as much as he should be. Ardarius Stewart's really good. Robert Foster's really good. Like, they have Derek Dieter, who played for Tino Babers last year at Bowling Green. Like, they have a lot of weapons. I didn't even say O.J. Howard, who went nuts in the national championship. So, yeah, I mean, he'll have a lot to work with. He shouldn't have too much pressure on him because they have a pretty nice offensive line with probably the best left tackle in football. So I think whoever they end up going with will probably be fine. And that's what they've done. Like, Jacob Toker was fine. Blake Sims was fine. Mataron was better than fine. But, like, if Mataron played for another school, would he have been? Like, would he have even gotten that much attention? Probably not. So yeah. I think Saban just likes to plug in quarterbacks who we know they're not going to make, like, huge mistakes. They're going to play within themselves. Like, definition of a system quarterback. Alabama, it almost like they're uncomfortable if they have more than that, even though they have been recruiting good guys. Like I said, I'm kind of rooting for Blake Barnett. He's a little more of an interesting personality. He's younger. He was, like, the number one or two quarterback in his class, so a little more intrigued there, but I would expect it to be Bateman.
Yeah, I buy that. All right. Looking at this, there's not a lot of interesting games in the first. Well, maybe there are. Ole Miss. Just quick, with minimal detail, does Alabama lose to Ole Miss again?
On paper, I'm tempted to choose it, and I just don't see it happening three times in a row.
Even on the road?
Yeah, like, if they hadn't lost one of the last two, I would say I kind of like it. But, like, I just can't see Alabama losing three straight games to Ole Miss. Like, Ole Miss has been really good. They you know, for reasons that you can probably argue, but, like, the on-the-field product has not been lacking. They haven't gotten over the hump, but, like, they've been one of the 10 best programs in the country the last couple of years. And I just, like, Alabama's too good. It's hard to fathom that happening. Now, obviously, it's on the table because Ole Miss is going to have the advantage of quarterback. They have, in all likelihood, at least, Chad Kelly, for as much as we've made fun of him through the years on this podcast due to his connection to Syracuse. And once recruitment from Syracuse ended up being amazing last year. Like, he was really, really good. And they have all kinds of weapons. Their defense is probably going to take a little bit of a hit after the Tendichis are drawn and all those other guys are drawn. But they're still loaded all across the field. It's just hard for me to think that Alabama's going to lose to a team 3 years in a row. So we'll see how it goes. Like, once we get into the season, it's just I'm not prepared to make that statement.
My one counter to that. Do you remember the time that Alabama, on a neutral field with 10 days of rest, needed a trick play to really, truly beat Clemson?
I do.
Now, Clemson runs, I'd say, maybe a little bit more wide-open version of what Ole Miss does, but they do run a similar version to what Ole Miss does, and I'd argue with less talent.
Basically, all the teams that have beaten Alabama in recent years run a spread like that.
Yep.
Oklahoma with Trevor Knight ran it 100%, and Trevor Knight went nuts. A&M with Manziel ran it, obviously. Ole Miss runs it. Clemson, I mean, they didn't beat Alabama, but they run it, and they came very close. Like, all the teams that have had success against Alabama run a very, very wide-open spread with a quarterback who can beat you both ways, and they just pick... You know, they pick that defense apart from you know, the middle of the field. So, no, it's certainly on the table. I mean, if anyone's going to beat, if there's a team Alabama loses this year, it's probably at Ole Miss. Maybe at Tennessee, although, like, that's even more like, show me that you can beat anyone. Show me that you can beat a huge team, Tennessee. And I respect the talent, but, like, Josh Dobbs, I'm not sold on.
No.
They have a lot of talent elsewhere, but, like, Tennessee needs to, like, win some of these big games before I'm ready to hand them the SEC, like some people are.
Sorry, Mike just fell off the table. All good.
It's because I blaspheme Tennessee. It's fine.
Texas,
I know you're a big Vols homer.
James decided to jump up onto the couch. But, yeah, I don't really love Josh Dobbs. I don't really love Tennessee. I think Butch Jones is inching himself towards fire. You know, the SEC has done a really just miserable job of getting themselves in the news for the worst things this past season. And, like, no one's talking about that, and that's kind of disturbing. Like, as a league, they've really kind of upped their game in terms of, like, scandal. And, yeah, it's amazing that, like, no one's been, like, pulling all these things together and going, well, yeah, you know, you're right. Like, half the teams in the league, minimum, have something going on right now off the field.
Well, I mean, Baylor happened, which just overshadowed everything.
Agreed. But, yeah, Alabama, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Tennessee, Vandy. That's just, like, off the top of my head.
Yeah, and we should probably say that Ole Miss's issues are much less than the rest. And Alabama's. Alabama's even, agreed, like, are not as bad.
Well, there was the gun thing.
The gun's not good, but the gun, you know, there was just a gun present. It wasn't fired.
Yeah.
It was actually told, like, apparently, based on the story that's been told, and they did get off for it. Like, they told the cop that the gun was there, and that's the only reason the cop knew about it. So, I'll take that over all of the allegations against the other three. But yeah, like, overall, SEC definitely not a great offseason for them as a whole.
No. Yeah, looking at, I guess, the rest of the schedule, because you raise a good point. There's a certain type of offense that beats Alabama. There's also a team, though, that I think has come very close to beating Alabama a couple times and has not. And I don't know if this is the year either, but Arkansas. And Arkansas on the road. This could be, do you think this could be a look ahead? That, I mean, I don't think you're really going to look past Arkansas necessarily, but you're looking ahead to Tennessee. You just sleptwalked through a 50-point win against Kent State, probably like a 35-point win against Kentucky, and then you have to head to Arkansas, knowing that Tennessee's up next.
It's interesting. I almost, it's tough with Arkansas because now they're replacing their quarterback with his younger brother. So who knows how that transition goes. They have a lot else. Like, their line play is always going to be good. They have running backs. I mean, they're always going to run the ball well. But they're, like, kind of have to plug in some talent after a couple of years where they just couldn't get it started early in the season. Clearly Bielema knows how to play with Saban. He has gotten over the hump, but they've been extremely close the last 2 years. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of it depends. Like, if Alabama can find their quarterback, then I think they'll be fine. But there's a chance that out of those four guys that are in contention, like, one of them does not really take the stranglehold of the job, or as Nick Saban doesn't win the team. Then, yeah, there's definitely some tricks here. At Ole Miss, like you said, at Arkansas, at Tennessee, even A&M. Like, A&M has a lot of talent, and I know they've kind of blown it the last couple of years, but if they can figure out Trevor Knight and find that player that played in that Sugar Bowl against Alabama and get him on the field most weeks, like, A&M has like three or four nasty receivers. They have solid running backs. Their defense, they have the best defensive player in the country, I think, in Myles Garrett. So there's a lot. I mean, it's the SEC. Every year there's a ton of huge games, but there are definitely some traps here for Alabama. It's just a matter of, like, with Alabama, I think you start with them and see, you know, what has to happen for them to lose rather than, you know, another team just walking up and beating them. Maybe Ole Miss is the only one that can probably step to them, and they've kind of proven that they can beat them straight up.
Right. Yeah, and to close out Alabama, yeah, I think that the only thing that really puts Ole Miss head and shoulders above Texas A&M, I mean, I think Ole Miss is better team than Texas A&M this year, but the only reason that I wouldn't even entertain the A&M thing is because A&M is at Bryant-Denny. And again, obviously, Ole Miss is in Oxford. Dan, looking once over at the schedule one more time, do you see Alabama in the SEC championship game? If so, do you see them in the playoff? And if so, do you see them winning it all?
I do. I'm not going to bet against Alabama. So I do. I see them winning the SEC. I think there are teams that can probably come close to the talent. I think Ole Miss. I think Tennessee. The problem is, where we talked about Alabama having question marks at quarterback, but like how many teams don't in the SEC? Like there's no team that has a quarterback that you feel 100% great about, except for maybe Ole Miss. Yeah. I mean, just looking at Alabama's schedule, like Tennessee, I don't know what Josh Dobbs has done to, aside from like the fact that he's an aerospace engineer and that's really cool. Like his play on the field's been pretty average, and it's better than what Tennessee's had, but it's not great. Arkansas's new quarterback, LSU. Like if you trust Brandon Harris, like more power to you. Mississippi State is a new quarterback. Auburn, who knows? So yeah, it's just Alabama has quarterback issues, but so does literally everyone else except for Ole Miss. Even A&M, like Trevor Knight, like there's a reason he got. I mean, Baker Mayfield's better, but it's not like he was all that great in 2014 when Baker Mayfield was not allowed to play. So until like further notice, I just have to ride with Alabama. And if they win the SEC, as long as they don't have like two losses, I assume, and two losses is definitely on the table, but I just assume they'll be in the playoff. And that should obviously blow up, but I just feel very comfortable penciling them in.
I buy it. Reluctantly, but I do. I have them in the playoff in my pick. I don't have them winning it. That honor goes to Michigan. But I do have Alabama winning it, getting themselves into the championship game this year.
I will say, like, more so than years past, though, I could, at the same time, you could tell me that Alabama loses three or four games this year. I don't think it'll happen, but it wouldn't shock me if they lost two.
Well, it's not because they've stepped back, and that's, I think, the key point for a lot of people. It's not that Alabama stepped back to the pack, quite the opposite. It's that the pack is getting up to them, and there's, you know, the top teams, especially in the SEC, are recruiting at such a level that it's not that they're on par with a squad that, you know, reels in the number one class pretty much every year, but they're getting within shouting range, and you don't necessarily just need a spread to beat them anymore.
That, and you just can't, like, you're not going to go undefeated every year, so eventually it catches up to you.
Right.
And I think for Alabama, like, it just might happen one year. It doesn't mean that they're not, like, the best team top to bottom, but, like, at one year, they're just going to get some bad luck, like Michigan did last year a couple times, or, you know, a couple of those other fluky games last year, and they're just not going to go 11-1 or 12-0 without something happening. So that could be this year. I mean, those are some tough road games. And while I don't totally buy into those teams, like, if you told me that two of four of those at Arkansas, at Tennessee, at LSU, at Ole Miss games were losses, like, that's not crazy.
Agreed. And you know what? Good segue. Speaking of tough road games, hi, Ole Miss. There's a good chance that a very good Ole Miss team could still lose at least three games this year. Based on this schedule, you've got a sort of road game against Florida State. It's over in Orlando. You've got roadies at Arkansas, at LSU, at A&M, and just in case you were looking for, like, you know, if you want to go back to the, you know, Ole Miss of old, you get a trip-up game against Vandy before your rivalry game, the Egg Bowl, against Mississippi State.
Yeah, I mean, the SEC West is just such a grind. Like, back-to-back games at Arkansas and at LSU, oof. Even if you like Ole Miss top-to-bottom better than both those teams, like, those are two super physical, super, like, grinded-out teams. And playing on the road back-to-back weeks is really tough. So, and then, like you said, Florida State is just, I mean, that's a brutal first game. Dalvin Cook could come out with his head on fire and go for 250. Alabama's Alabama. Georgia, like, they're a question mark, but they're still incredibly talented. Down the stretch, I think after they play at LSU, that's pretty manageable. Auburn's a question mark at A&M, like we just talked about them. They could be very good, but you have to see it first. Ole Miss shouldn't be too troubled by Georgia Southern. I know we like Georgia Southern, but they're, you know, not the same level as Ole Miss. I don't buy into Mississippi State at all this year. Or Vandy, they're interesting, but they're offensively, like, they probably won't score in this team. So this one's actually, like, a little friendlier toward down the at the end. But those first, six games, it doesn't get much worse. First seven games, doesn't get much tougher than that.
Yeah, I think that's dead on. I mean, and even they're not going to lose to Wofford, but
they just lost to Memphis, so we can't just say they won't.
Right, but like I know. You look at even the Wofford game though. Like, you get a 5-day break to face Wofford. There's just the schedule is brutal. I still think Ole Miss should go 9-3 to 10-2.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, if Kelly puts together like a Heisman type year, they could win the SEC West. Like that, they have the quarterback. They're like the one team that can say they have the quarterback. They replaced other stuff around, you know, around the roster, but they have some interesting receivers. Evan Engram's really nice tight end. Their defense, I think, will take a step back, but they still have some really nice players on that side of the ball. It's just funny how it works out. Like if a lot of teams, they in this league, like, they have everything and they just missing the quarterback. Ole Miss, like, they probably wish that they could have gotten what they'll probably get out of Chad Kelly this year, last year when they had everybody. Not that Chad Kelly wasn't very good last year, but they're like the one team that, you know, they're getting their senior quarterback where they lose a lot across the board else otherwise. But they're in pretty good position going forward as well, because they have Shea Patterson waiting in the wings, who's probably going to take over as a redshirt freshman next year, assuming he doesn't play this year. And was the number one quarterback in the country. So for however Hugh Freeze is getting it done, he's really building something at Ole Miss. They just have to hope that doesn't get torn down by outside forces.
Too true. So yeah, I think Ole Miss is a playoff nominee. I think that they are a team that will be playing in a very good bowl no matter what. Going down the SEC West a little bit more, LSU faces a very different type of schedule than Ole Miss does. I feel like despite the fact that they're in the SEC West, this seems infinitely more manageable. I'm probably underestimating Florida, but I think LSU beats them in their annual game. This is an LSU team that, and maybe I'm underestimating Wisconsin too, but this is an LSU team that, with Fournette alone, should be able to get to 7-0. But what they do after that, I mean, this whole season is going to be defined by a 3-game stretch with a bye week in there as well from October 22nd to November 12th.
Yeah, I mean, that you nailed it. Like, Florida is, you know, going to Ben Hill Griffin is never going to be easy, but they lost their quarterback, Will Greer, to suspension/transfer. But like you said, they should be able to get some nice momentum. Obviously, they did the same thing last year, and it didn't end up mattering because Alabama shellacked them once they finally played a tough team, and they kind of just spun their wheels after that. Wisconsin seems interesting. I don't buy in on the Badgers like as a team that's going to go out and beat LSU. I think they could win the Big Ten West, but they're so hard to get excited about.
Especially off campus. But,
yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool they're playing at Lambeau, as a Packer fan especially. So that should be an interesting thing in that regard. And it's more interesting than playing at, like, the 18th neutral site game at Jerry World. But just, like, Wisconsin, again, they don't have a quarterback. They don't have, like, Torrey Clement's really good, but it's not like they have the same rushing attack they had a year or two ago. They're just kind of a boring team. They'll probably be pretty good, but LSU has so much talent across the board outside of quarterback that I just can't imagine LSU not winning that game by like 10 points. And then, like you said, until they play Ole Miss, and that 3-game stretch with Ole Miss, Alabama, and at Arkansas, that's just really brutal.
Yeah, and I think for me, LSU, like, if you can get through that, like, if you get through that at 1-2, you're not making the playoff, but you're still in contention potentially for the SEC West, depending on, you know, what else happens. And I think you're definitely in contention for, you know, one of the big money bowls as well. I mean, Fournette's obviously, like, going pro.
And I think he's done after this.
He's done. I want to watch LSU this year because I want to see less rebound and because I want to see you know, what Fournette can do when he's a little more motivated. I feel like this year he's definitely more motivated. I feel like, you know, right or wrong, I feel like Ezekiel Elliott going in the top five this year's NFL draft is probably motivated a few running backs at least, including Fournette, Cook, and a bunch of others, to really put in some stellar campaigns, because it seems like running backs can get paid and can get, you know, highly regarded yet again in the NFL, even if temporarily.
Yeah, I mean, I think Elliott was a really interesting prospect because he was not only, you know, one of the four or five best runners in college football for a couple of years, but he's also a absolutely outstanding blocker, which is really underrated in the NFL from running back because there's so much passing. And he was one of the best receiving backs. So he really had it all. Fournette doesn't catch the ball that much. I don't really know how he is as a blocker. I'm not going to say he's bad. I just don't know. As a runner, he has it. He's unbelievable. But yeah, like you said, now that they've kind of broken through with Elliott and kind of proven that you can get picked high, and early the year before as well, like there's a little bit more of a resurgence in running backs going in the first round. There's a chance, you know, he really wants to show out. If they get quarterback play, LSU could be the favorite, just because if Brandon Harris finds it, like, he has all the weapons. And we talked about this last year leading up to our game, and we saw it. Malachi Dupree and Travon Dural, like, that's as good a wide receiver combo as you'll see. And it's just kind of a shame they haven't had a guy that can get them the ball reliably, because they are both, like, athletic freaks. And Fournette should have room to run, because those two guys should be able to stretch the field. And Harris and Anthony Jennings before him just never quite had found the consistency to do it. But this team could be a lot of fun if they get at least, like, average. If they got, like, Alabama, okay, like, game manager quarterback play, they could be really special.
Agreed. And it's obviously a little bit easier, too, not just with Fournette, but when you have a defense full of, you know, future All-Pros and things like that. I mean, this secondary...
Their defense is filthy.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Their secondary is probably the best in the conference. Linebacker Corbin Kendall Beckwith, I think, is an absolute stud. This team is too many names on defense alone to be out of any contest they're in. And if they are, then yeah, maybe the calls for Les's job are warranted, because this seems like a team that has the pieces. All they need, if that quarterback play can just figure itself out, you know, that 9-10 win season ceiling suddenly looks like a hell of a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, it makes, like, that game against Alabama last year so confusing, because defensively they should not be outmatched by that team, and maybe they lose a slugfest, but it almost feels like there's, like, a mental thing there, like, where they're just like, we're just not on the same level, and they let Alabama, who obviously had, you know, a monster running back with Derrick Henry last year, but otherwise, like, this defense should have matched up better, and they just got rolled. So it'd be nice to see LSU break through, because I think the SEC West would be more interesting if one of these teams, beside from Ole Miss, who, you know, will end up stubbing their toe afterwards anyway, would step up and compete for the top spot here.
Yeah. And you know what? Another team that could be, I think we'll close out the SEC West on this, because I know we're kind of running into OT. All of the three teams we named so far head to Arkansas this year. That sounds like there's at least one upset in there.
Oh, for sure.
Based on that. Otherwise, you know, look at TCU, that's a tough road trip. But otherwise, Arkansas probably is the most manageable schedule of all. At A&M, at Auburn, at Mississippi State, at Missouri. Those are your four easiest in-conference games, and they're all, you know, on the road. So in some regard, you know, that's unfortunate. In others, that if Arkansas is going to be a very good team this year, they could potentially take a step to be a great team by winning those four games and then taking at least one of the games against those other three, if not more.
Yeah, it's just tough, because I feel like in the last two years is when Arkansas should have hit the ground running with the players, the, you know, veterans in place. And this year they replace Allen for Allen. Austin Allen steps in at quarterback, replacing his brother Brandon. So who knows how that goes. I don't think you can just assume. They lose both their really nice running backs, Jonathan Williams and Alex,
yeah, that guy. Alex Collins. You know,
Alex Collins. I would say Alex Jones, and I'm like, he is not a running back. He is a much different thing. Not a running back. Yeah, I mean, last year I feel like is when they should have really gone off to a fast start. They've been in Bielema's system for long enough. This year, I mean, they still have a lot of players and some veterans, but I feel like they might just be replacing enough where it's kind of a stop and start again. Defensively, they're very senior-laden, so if they can pick it up on that end, they could be really competitive, and obviously they've had they've played some of the best teams in the SEC very tough in the years past, and they tend to get a big upset or two. I think they've beaten LSU 2 years in a row.
I think you're right.
Yeah. But then they're also playing
Bonkers Ole Miss game last year.
Oh, that was amazing. That was such a good game. But yeah, I mean, the other problem is that they're at a major talent disadvantage against pretty much every team in their division aside from Mississippi State. So, like, they can make up for it with good system and good coaching and being, you know, just knowing what they want to do in their game plan. But if they're, I mean, replacing your quarterback and your two stud running backs, obviously Williams was hurt most of last year, but that makes it a lot harder. So I don't know if this is the year they break through, but that would be cool as well, because Brett Bielema actually drives me crazy sometimes with some of his rhetoric and whatnot, but he is a very good football coach, and he does bring kind of a unique, you know, he flies in the face of the wide-open offenses, which I love those wide-open offenses, but I think part of the magic of college football is the fact that no two teams look exactly alike, unlike the NFL, so I kind of do embrace, like, Bielema's just total meathead football as well.
I would concur. I guess with the last couple minutes that we have, and by have, I mean don't, but whatever. Dan, who do you think is going to win the SEC East? And let's talk about that team and that team alone, and we'll forget the rest of the division completely.
So we earlier said that we weren't buying all the way in on Tennessee. I still think you have to sign for them as the favorite just because they bring back so much. It wouldn't shock me if Georgia just jumped up and took it because, you know, Georgia also has a ton of talent. But Tennessee, like, they've basically, since Butch Jones got there, they've been building these, like, these giant recruiting classes of, like, 25 to 30 guys.
I like top 5 to 10, like, level talent, too.
Right.
It hasn't come together yet.
No. And I think some of that, like, it matters. It depends on Josh Dobbs maturing and finding, you know, that consistency. But they have Jalen Hurd, who is an absolute train at running back. They have a lot of really good receivers. They have defensive linemen to spare. Khalil McKenzie is a load in the middle. They have defensive end, is it Derek Barnett, who's incredible, like, outside of Miles Garrett at A&M, probably the best in the league. So, like, they have all these guys. They basically have this giant junior class that is all coming up into, you know, upperclassmanhood now. So on paper, they look great. And obviously, they came on really strong last year. We, for whatever reason, we always joke about this game, but they absolutely just destroyed Northwestern in the Outback Bowl last year. Oh, yeah. So I think it's fair to call them the favorite because, like, Florida's dealing with all their stuff. Georgia has a new coach and might have a freshman quarterback this year, so it's a lot, asking them a lot to win the league. And then Mizzou, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, you know. you know how we feel about those teams.
Back half of the year for them is a travesty, but in a good way for them. It's going to be unwatchable because they're going to win 5 straight games in pretty convincing fashion. So it's really going to come down again. This is, you know, life in the SEC East. It's going to come down to what happens in that, you know, 4-game stretch. Florida at Georgia, at A&M, and Alabama. Now, Florida's my SEC East pick, and I'm not really thrilled about it. I could happily be convinced that Tennessee is the pick instead. And, you know, maybe if you're in similar boat to me, you just look at last year's results and see how close Tennessee was to contending for a national title. 7-point loss to Oklahoma in overtime, 1-point loss to Florida, 4-point loss to Arkansas, 5-point loss at Alabama. And those are your 4 losses for Tennessee last year.
Yeah, no, and that's like a team motto for them, basically. I think whatever that point total is. Like, they were very close. So we'll see. I have no problem with you not picking Tennessee because history has told you that Tennessee will not win the East. But I think on paper, I totally get why they're a pretty heavy favorite. I do not want to see Tennessee get blasted by Alabama,
no.
Have that be their only loss, and then have them get blasted by Alabama again in Atlanta. Like, I just need I want an entertaining SEC championship, which we've been lacking since Auburn Mizzou. Auburn didn't they rough up Mizzou? Auburn
Mizzou was fun for like a half or so.
What was the last really good SEC championship? It wasn't Alabama Georgia, was it?
No, that game was boring.
The last play was crazy.
I mean, I know we're already in overtime, but whatever. At this point, you've made your bed here, so you might as well just stick around.
I was actually just talking about with someone like how we never actually like have an hour long podcast. We're always a little bit over, so I apologies to all of my loyal listeners and my actual group of friends who are now 10 minutes past an hour here.
Yeah, whatever. Just listen to this while you're on a subway or something. The last good game, I mean, maybe Alabama-Georgia was a good game. If Georgia wasn't stupid and didn't know how to clock manage, that would have turned out differently. So December 1st, 2012 was the last, like, really, truly watchable start-to-finish SEC championship game.
Okay.
And that's the only one of the last 7 or 8.
Yeah, I mean,
and most of them have actually sucked.
The worst, Alabama-Mizzou was so unfortunate.
Just bad. Just all around, just terrible. But yeah. Okay, so my thing with the SEC is always, when in doubt, pick Florida. Because that just seems natural, and without even looking, yeah, they've made more appearances than anybody else. So totally makes sense to just pick them. Tennessee has been kind of down. Georgia isn't as good as it's supposed to be. So what are you left with? You're left with the team that has made more SEC championship games than... Nope, sorry. They made one less on their own than Georgia and Tennessee combined. So yeah, to me, that means just pick Florida when you're at a loss for who's going to win SEC East, and you have a 50% chance of being right.
And that is the SEC.
That's the SEC. All right. I think we can close out here. Dan, thank you as always for joining. It was a pleasure.
Yes, sorry about the day delay here for everyone, but hopefully this will take you into a fun and prosperous weekend.
Yeah, blame my anniversary. It's all good.
Yeah, how dare you celebrate your marriage, John?
How
we have listeners. They depend on us.
I'll be sure to honor my my contract with you listeners much more next time than the contract with my wife. On that note, that was Dan. I'm John. Thanks for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, on whatever other service you use to listen to us. And go Orange in 30-ish days.
Go Orange.